Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
We're going to have fun today, Jake. We're going to have fun. We have Paul Sewald joining us at noon.
Yes.
Okay. We've got new sound from new Seahawks defensive coordinator, old Seahawks coach, new Seahawks defensive coordinator Clint Hurt. All good stuff. Mike Lefko in with us. Guest producing. Lefko, always a great time. It'll be fun. It's a fun day.
Sorry.
Look, Lefko, don't undersell yourself, okay? We've got to stay hyped and jacked right now, as Pete Carroll would say, because once again, I have to talk about a Mariners loss, and I don't want to do it, but I'm going to do it, and it's going to be fine. The Mariners, unfortunately, were shut out for the sixth time. Sixth time. It's tied with the A's for most in MLB. You are tied with a team that just had a possum climb into its press box for most shutouts.
I don't see the problem. I'm not sure what you're insinuating there, but there's nothing wrong with possums. In fact, we learned that they could be lucky. So, you know, maybe the Mariners, they need a possum around here so we could get some luck with the bats. But to your point,
you're saying if we had more rodents in T-Mobile, maybe the offense would pick up. That's
if it wasn't such a beautiful ballpark, who knows what
could
happen.
That's our biggest problem.
I would say right now, you hit a certain breaking point with your teams, and you try to muster up all of the patience possible. And, Stacy, I am about right here. I know that's great radio and great audio for everyone listening right now. But on the video stream,
he's doing a tiny little, it's like 2 centimeters, right like there. That pinch.
I am so close to losing my mind. Very close. I'm not there yet. But I'm very close. And one of the reasons why I'm not there yet is because, you know, Stacy, if we talk about last year and the differences or things that are comparable, I feel like we're deja vu all over again in terms of the conversation we were having last year. The frustrations about this lineup, the frustrations about what you did or did not do in the offseason to truly better this lineup overall. But the difference being is that this lineup does have more potential. But right now, when you're looking at a group that's rolling out in the bottom end of your lineup, after Julio Rodriguez, you've got Mike Ford, who's hitting 143 and is a triple-A, 4-A player, however you want to describe him. Steven Souza Jr., who, again, I think is drawing a lot of ire from Mariners fans right now. Toro, who's hitting 164. And you got Cal Raleigh, who's hitting 079. Yeah, I said that right. 079.
To be fair, that's actually an increase.
Okay. Correct.
It's actually an increase from 069,
okay,
which is not nice, ironically.
Looking at the positive, all right, I always appreciate that about you. This is incredibly frustrating to watch. And to hear Scott Service say this, cut number one, it makes it all that much more difficult for me not to come unglued.
Yeah, we got to change the record, don't we? It's the same old song. Outstanding outing by Logan tonight. He was great, really. He ran into trouble there a little bit in the second. Thought he was going to work his way through it. You know, it was kind of the story of the game was the second inning. We hit into a double play, and they found a hole and got their runs in. But outstanding pitch game on both sides of the. Again, Logan was outstanding.
It has nothing to do with Scott Service. It has nothing to do with him. It is the fact that in the second inning, a 3-0 game, felt like that was it. That opportunity, you were not going to get another one quite like that again for your offense. And Steven Souza Jr., with the bases loaded, hits into a double play. And that's it? That's the game? That's where your offense is at right now. In the second inning, when you lose out on opportunities like that, you're going, oh, that's a bummer. That's probably the game for us. That's really tough.
I understand there's 162 games in a season. So if you were maybe at the grocery store, or maybe you thought, I'm already done with this series. I'll check back in for Boston. Let me just remind you what happened. So in the second inning, just in case you didn't know, it's a bases loaded situation, one out. Okay, the Mariners have a chance to get something done here, and Steven Souza Jr. grounds into a double play. Not great. So then the bottom of
the
second
first
comes
pitch.
Up. On the first pitch. So then bottom of the second comes up, okay? Now, it's only the second, but the second inning itself kind of encapsulates the game. The bottom of the second, bases loaded, two outs, okay, for the Blue Jays. And George Springer hits a bases-clearing triple because Souza dives for a ball, which wasn't that hot off the bat, 70-mile-per-hour exit velocity, and misses. So three runs score, that ends up being the entirety of the game. Neither team scores a run from then on out, but that's the difference, and that's the difference in an otherwise phenomenal day from Logan Gilbert. So Scott Servais said, look, it all came down to that second inning. And for this game, he's right.
He's 100% right.
For this game in particular, he's right. However, is that second inning not maybe also the story of the season just a little bit? Because to me, the story of the season right now, in addition to, you know, pitching being really solid and the offense not heating up, is that there are guys in this lineup that may not otherwise be in this lineup had the Mariners been able to do either what fans wanted or what they wanted to, but mm-hmm. couldn't. Right?
Yeah.
And
that Jared Kelnick and guys
exactly.
like that are actually playing the level that they were anticipating. Yeah.
Yes. You mentioned it being deja vu. Not being able to see the Mariners offense heat up and once again just feeling like you're not getting hits. Deja vu is feeling like you've seen something before when you really haven't, and it's this eerie feeling. However, I wouldn't say this is deja vu. We've seen this before. Instead, what this is a failing plan. You knew heading into the offseason that your offense, which picked up steam at the end of the season, that your offense finished 30th in a number of offensive categories, and you needed it to be better. You also knew that you got 90 wins on the season, a phenomenal, really fun season, because you got lucky in a couple places. And you knew that you'd have to make up for luck by getting something sure, and something sure would be a veteran bat, a good bat.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there are people hearing this saying, but Stacy, Chris Bryant isn't doing that great. Trevor Story, not that great. Corey Seager, you want Corey Seager in here? I mean, he's doing fine. But there are plenty of bats that we can point to and we can say, look, you know, you didn't have these guys. But,
right.
But what if you had those guys in addition to the guys you already like rather than, so what if you had Chris Bryant instead of Souza? You know what I mean? No offense to Souza, but like Souza, Mike Ford, these are guys that are up here because of injury, yes, but also because there isn't a ton of depth on this team right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that is myriad issues that play into it. Some in the Mariners' control, some not in the Mariners' control. Either way, when you look at it, they're in a tough spot right now.
Yeah.
And it must be exceptionally, exceptionally frustrating, not just for them, but especially for fans who have seen this movie before.
Yeah, 100%. And when you talk about depth overall, I mean, you're obviously banking that Mitch Haniger is going to be healthy. You're looking at Jared Kelnick hopefully taking the next step, and then Kyle Lewis, if he can get healthy and come to the team at some point, that he would be an addition to, that you would see Abraham Toro be able to, you know, hit more like a pro bat on a consistent basis, right? You'd like to see the catchers really, you know, step up. And Tom Murphy, to his credit, has had a decent start to the season, but obviously got hurt, and that sidetracked his progress. But overall, the guy that you wanted to see step up is Cal Raleigh, right? Not even hitting over 100 right now. The other guy that you really wanted to contribute is Luis Torrens and his bat and what he was able to do for you as a DH last year in the second half of the season. He's done better in recent games, but he hasn't gotten going the way that you wanted to. So even your depth pieces that you were counting on have not come through for you in the way that you had designed or that you were hoping that this thing would come together. I have to imagine that there's a lot of sleepless nights for Jerry Dipoto right now, because this has not come together the way that he was hoping, the way that he had vision. And right now, the reason why I also say that I am razor thin to losing it, but I'm not, is because as of right now, the Mariners have not buried themselves out of playoff contention.
Right.
They still have an opportunity. So we're talking about last year, this version of what we saw last year. At one point in time, they were 500, you know, going to the end of May into June, and they end up rattling off 90 wins. So I'm not going to sit here and say it's over, it's doomsday, this, that, and the other, but it doesn't look great. And you've got guys that need to step up and need to be able to produce for this lineup and to be able to drive runs on a consistent basis, or else this is going to be a very frustrating season when you watch Logan Gilbert and Flexen have you know, two really, really solid outings back-to-back nights, and you're not able to capitalize on it. You're not able to give them support, whether it's in your lineup, you know, producing runs, or your defense having their back. I mean, Logan Gilbert pitched a pretty good game if it isn't for that massive error by Souza in the outfield.
I want to look ahead just a little bit, although I'm not sure how to see it. Is glass half full or glass half empty? I'll tell you what I mean. So Evan White begins his rehab assignment with Tacoma today. That means their lineup will likely have Jared Kelnick, Kyle Lewis, and Evan White starting. Kyle Lewis last night was 2-for-4 with a home run, all good stuff. And he's looking promising. We're expecting to see him up here maybe sometime around the beginning of June. That was Jerry DePoto's latest update. Is it discouraging to see most of the key pieces of your rebuild in AAA? Or is it a sign that the Mariners can get a boost to the lineup this season?
I don't know how to quite answer that question because it's a very, I'm not going to say it's a good question. It's a tough question. We've learned to distinguish those two. Mike,
why can't you just say it's a good
why
question?
Why can't you just say it's a good
question? Well, because we have a good question tracker and we have a competition for how many good questions there are.
Do you think it's a good question?
I think it's a tough question that makes me have to think a little bit. But what I would say is that they're right now in a stage where they wish that those guys that you just mentioned were with this big league club and that were helping and contributing for this club. So I look at it as a negative more so than a boost. Jared Kelnick right now, it just went back down. He's not coming back up anytime soon. Kyle Lewis could be coming up here at the end of the month, which obviously would be
exciting
and it would be great to see him, but he's been out a little while. I mean, the expectation is that Kyle Lewis is immediately going to come up to the major league level and after, you know, injuries and everything else and just he's going to rake. I mean, he's capable of doing it, but that'd be a tough deal. That'd be a tough ask. And I don't know if we're setting ourselves up for failure in terms of thinking that. But whatever the case may be, I am still holding out hope that the rest of Major League Baseball is struggling to produce runs. The only thing that is the problem is you look within your own division, you look at the Astros, you look at the Angels that you're supposed to compete with, and they're doing just fine right now. Mm-hmm. So it's very tough to look at the Mariners at this current moment. They need tonight in the worst way, and certainly as you head towards the weekend and we start talking about the Boston Red Sox series, they really need to get that going before they come home to give themselves a chance to, you know, be in the best position to climb out of the hole that they have currently dug themselves in.
All right, as a reminder, Paul Sewald is going to join us later today. We're also going to get to the latest from Clint Hurt in just a couple minutes. First, though, let's get to Headline Rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacy.
Well, the Heat win game one of the Eastern Conference Finals over the Celtics. What's the real headline?
I think you mean Jimmy Butler's Heat wins game one of the Eastern Conference Finals. Butler had 41 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals, 3 blocks. Most importantly, though, the relationship between him and head coach Eric Spoelstra is one of the more interesting in sports right now, and I'm curious to see how far the number one seeded Heat get, because if you guys remember, back in late March, it was a game against the Warriors, Jimmy Butler and Spoelstra got into it on the sideline. It was a heated argument. The two had to be separated, or rather kind of like Butler was walked away.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a long buildup of key issues. It wasn't necessarily one thing that happened in that moment. If you follow the team, there's some tension between Jimmy Butler and Spo and also with the team. But if you don't, all you need to know is that this was a lingering issue that hadn't gone away. And if you don't follow the team, know that it's also one of the more interesting storylines, because since then they're 15-6, finished with the number one seed. And they are a head coach and a star player who butt heads, who often disagree, but somehow have managed to make this team so incredibly successful, particularly over the last month and a half. It's curious to see how far they're going to get.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, we were so focused on the Suns and Chris Paul and that number one seed on the Western Conference.
Us and Pat Bev, man, we were so focused on Chris Paul.
Right, yeah, 100%. Yeah, all energy towards Chris Paul.
Find yourself someone as obsessed with you as Pat Bev is with Chris Paul.
Hey, but you look at Jimmy Butler at age 32 with the Miami Heat and, you know, obviously being the star of that team and they're the number one seed, people overlooked him. People overlooked him, and that's kind of been the story of his career. An incredible scorer, someone who is, you know, not afraid to mix it up whatsoever with his words. And I think that this is a guy that I'm going to be curious to see how far he can take the Miami Heat. Is this something where you're looking at an older player like Jimmy Butler who is getting his opportunity to shine? Does he have the ability to carry a team to a championship? Man, I'm certainly rooting for him. It's almost like the villain you root for.
A little bit.
And I appreciate and like the brashness of Jimmy Butler and what he's grown into.
If you are only a casual NBA fan, or maybe you only tune in during the playoffs, I would say that those are the two most interesting stories in the East and West. One, Jimmy Butler and Spo, just kind of like what's going to happen with that relationship. Can a very tense relationship when two people butt heads and don't seem to particularly like each other still be a successful one if one is a great head coach and one is a phenomenal star player? Can they actually make it all the way? And on the other side, I would say Luka and the Mavs, probably the more interesting side of that story. Obviously, plenty of Golden State fans. I don't need to tell you how great that team can be in those stars. But to me, those are the two most interesting storylines. If you're just like, yeah, I'll tune in. I'll see what it's about.
Yeah, 100%.
I like Luka. A little bit of an attitude to him. Did you see a little snarl he had toward the Suns?
Love
fans, bench, whatever it was. Yeah.
So yeah, but I,
he's got some attitude.
He does have some attitude. I don't know if he would want to come at Jimmy Butler with that kind of attitude. I would love to see that matchup. That would be a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Headline rewrites.
Well, the XFL, it's back again. They've reached an agreement with Disney to broadcast every game on ESPN, ABC, and FX starting in 2023 when their season begins again. What is the real headline?
Great broadcasting news for the XFL. Will its product make the most of it?
That is the big question here.
Would you say it's a good question?
What were we about to say there, Jake?
You were going to say...
It sounded like a G sentence.
It sounded like you were maybe going to say it's a good question.
I don't think I was. But the XFL is going to get their opportunity. They are going to get their shot. And I honestly thought they did a really good job when they first rolled this out, right? The Seattle Dragon and the... You know, it was honestly, it was a fun crowd. It was a fun energy. Okay. I mean, I thought the product looked really good.
Yeah.
You know, and to have it end as it did with the pandemic was really a bummer because I, for the first time in a long time, I was like, hey, here's a product that could actually survive here in terms of spring leagues. And I know you have the USFL going on right now, but I really have high hopes for what the XFL can end up producing here.
The toughest thing with the XFL, and this was at least my experience with it, is the television product cannot compete with the NFL.
No.
We all know that. However, the in-game experience obviously can't compete with professional sports, but was a blast. I had so much fun, and that's also in part because the crowd is going to be smaller, which means your seats are cheaper and better. And you aren't seeing, Aaron Donald out there, but you're still seeing like a really, you're at a fun football game. And
yeah.
It's a great time. This is the last thing we did before the pandemic. A whole bunch of people, Tay's giving me a heads up. We were all there. Yeah, Tay and Molly were there. It was a great time. And we all went to watch the game from a box, and it was, I still remember it. I have pictures from that day. So it's almost one of those things where it's like, I wonder how the XFL can try to find its best success when the best version of it, in my opinion, is in person.
Well, that is the part where the XFL has to get creative and they have to get competitive with college football. And that's where this is going to get really interesting as time goes on, because college football is a juggernaut. The whole concept of NIL was there because it needed to be. But also the fact that you had, you know, leagues like the USFL and the XFL that are saying, hey, we don't have requirements in regards to age. We could take players, pay players coming out of high school. And if you can start to get some of those guys, or you can start to pull some of the top players from college football. And I know, you know, people are listening to that and their heads are exploding. But legitimately, that's how you change the product. That's how you make the product better and add more intrigue to it. Because if you're able to get some highly, you know, sought after draftable players in the XFL, that's how you get intrigue, Stacey. That's how you draw eyes to a league like the XFL. And I have to imagine that they've thought that through.
Headline rewrites.
Well, the media booth was evacuated at the Oakland Coliseum after a live possum crept in from the ceiling. What's the real headline?
Surprised we didn't hear there were more possums at Minute Maid, considering how much they love trash cans.
Oh. Wouldn't there be a raccoon, always, though?
Well, I would say raccoons, rats, possums, astros. You can always find them in and around trash cans.
Any type of rodent. And, you know, very fitting. Very fitting, because that's exactly what it was. You know, I still can't get over this. I can't get over the idea of being in the studio right now, doing our show, and out of nowhere, look up from the ceiling.
And a possum comes down?
And a possum is coming down from the ceiling. And not a small possum, a large possum. That would freak me out.
I feel like the possum looked innocent. Now, would sure. I go anywhere near it? Absolutely
just
not.
Just in its normal environment,
absolutely
normal
not.
Habitat.
Like it looks, it has big eyes, therefore it looks like a Disney cartoon character. However, I don't mess with any kind of animal. It doesn't matter. There are dogs I won't even approach. Like if it looks like it can
really,
bite
you're obsessed with dogs.
I mean, I am, but maybe not every dog.
Mm.
I'm afraid of small dogs. I got bit by a little dachshund once.
What?
I know, it was so rude. I was walking
you're
by.
You're afraid
it.
Of small dogs.
I'm not afraid of small dogs. I've just been bit twice by small dogs. Mm. Once when I was a child, and once when I was a teenager, and neither were my fault, except for one of them.
Going to say, I highly doubt that. I highly doubt that.
Either way, this would obviously be horrific to turn around and see a rodent of any kind creeping into the media booth, but it is quite fitting that it happened in Oco, where they have ongoing issues. There were already feral cats. You think they would have taken care of the
possum? It's a mess.
I guess
absolute
not.
Mess.
It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Guess who we heard from this morning, Jake?
Clint Hurt, right?
We did. Longtime Seahawks coach and new defensive coordinator Clint Hurt was on with Mike Salk this morning. If you missed it, don't worry. We'll tell you everything we learned about what the Seahawks defense could look like in 22. That's next.
Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
All right, we heard
the Scott Service Show.
We heard from new Seahawks defensive coordinator Clint Hurt this morning on with Mike Salk. He talked about a lot of things, so I'm not actually going to be able to get to them all in this segment. We're going to get to them at 10:30, and then we're going to get to the remaining ones a little later in the show, but we will cover all the bases and make sure you guys are well aware. So let's start here. Clint Hurt talking about the multiple looks, the ability to shift back and forth in a 3-4 defense and a 4-3.
And here's the thing. It's not that if you go 3-4 that you just don't have any 4-3 elements to your defense. That's not true. A lot of the fronts and things like that, the multiplicity that you can give, you can still play over and under structures that you usually have in 4-3 defenses. But you can also play bounced and play as a 0 and 2-4 techniques and have overhangs and things of that nature. So the multiplicity of 3-4 defense is why I've become a big fan of it, because I can get to whatever I need to with that structure and principle and the principles with it coverage-wise as well.
Jake, what do you mean by the multiplicity of a 3-4 defense?
Well, it just means that you have multiplicity, flexibility, however you want to say it. But what it does is it allows you, no matter what your personnel grouping is, Stacey, meaning that you have, you know, true base personnel, which in this case will be 3 down linemen and 4 linebackers, whether or not you have 3 down linemen, 3 linebackers, and a nickel player, right? However you put that together from a structure standpoint, that the overall defensive line, the front, can line up in so many different ways. So as an offense, when you come up to the line of scrimmage and you're a quarterback and you're setting protections in the passing game and in the running game and the offensive line are trying to make their calls, you have to be more on your P's and Q's, because you have to be able to identify what the front really is. When you face a 4-3 team, Stacey, more often than not, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get a true even front. You're going to get an over front, an under front. And that's, you know, that it's going to have
over front, under front.
I can't explain it on here, but you know, the simple terms
like,
of what you're going to do.
Simpletons, just deal with it. You got Google.
It's basically how the line is shaded to the strength. So if I have the tight end to the right and it's an over front, the defensive line is going to be shifted towards the tight end. More towards that side of the ball. If it's an under front, the defensive line is shifted away from the strength of the formation to the other side. So those are the types of fronts that you see, and you know that, and you can quickly identify it. With the 3-4 front, as Clint Hurt just said, you could get to an over-under front, you can get to a bare front, you can get to a true 3-4 look. I mean, there's a lot of different fronts that you can look at and make it more confusing, have to make the offense think more than in a traditional sense. And so that's what Clint Hurt is getting at right there.
I would say the number, not the number one question, one of the top questions I see whenever we talk about what talk about what the Seahawks defense could look like in a 3-4 is people saying, wait, I'm confused. Does this mean it's going to be a 3-4 and we never see 4-3? Does this mean that they're going to switch back and forth between the two? Is there any defense in the league that kind of does a 50-50? What should I expect as a Seahawks
fan? I would say don't worry about it. Like, don't worry about what they're going to line up in their front. Most casual football fans aren't going to be able to recognize or see the differences in terms of over-under fronts, in terms of how this looks. What I would say is that they are a 3-4 base front, meaning that they want to have four linebackers on the field, two guys on the ends that are standing up in two-point stances, not with their hand down in the ground, and that they can slide into a 4-3 structure if they want to. So that's what he's talking about. We are going to have 3-4 personnel, and we can play a 3-4 front or a 4-3 front. We can do any of them, however I want to do it as the defensive coordinator in the moment, and it's not a big change to how we do things.
All right, speaking of the defense and some changes we could see, it's not just the 3-4 from a 4-3. It's also going to be a change in the secondary. So, Clint, how will the defense change the secondary?
You have two different principles when you play zone coverage in this league. Some teams are spot drops where you really focus on hitting landmarks, and once you get to your depth, you get your vision on the quarterback and you're melting and moving off the eyes of the quarterback and reading his shoulders and whatnot, where he's going with the football, and then you got to break and react on the ball. And the other side you can play is more of a zone matchup principle, where you're really playing bodies and pattern matching more so than playing in an area. So are you playing a man or are you playing the area? There's a difference. So you have either zone match or you have spot drop vision and break. And we've been a vision and break defense here for a really long time. And we'll have some of those principles and certain calls that'll stay alive. But the big thing right now is obviously the ability to pattern match, and you got to be able to react to the stems of receivers and whatnot and match up with people.
Jake, you got to break it down again. What kind of changes is he saying that fans are going to see in the secondary?
Well, the difference and some of the frustration that you had with the Seahawks defense over the last couple of years is the fact that this has been a group that has, as Clint Hurt articulated, that they are spot droppers. So that means in a zone, Stacy, in zone principles, if I'm a linebacker, okay, I'm trying to get to a certain point where it's going to be around 12 yards of depth. I'm going to turn my eyes, get them on the quarterback, and I'm going to feel around me if there's guys in my zone. And you're not necessarily looking up receivers or pass catchers to make that happen. You're getting to your zone and you're reading and reacting off of the quarterback's eyes and what's happening in front of you. Well, in more match principles, I like them better personally from an offensive perspective and a defensive perspective, because as you play zone and you play with more match principles, it means that you are attaching yourself to certain receivers, right? So instead of being passive by being a straight zone dropper, I am now being aggressive. I am now trying to shorten the windows that a quarterback can make. I am, once someone comes into my zone, I am attaching to them. I am putting my hands on them. I am looking them up instead of just being soft and just allowing windows to happen all across the field. And what I think the Legion of Boom did so well was that they had, these zone principles, but they were incredibly aggressive, incredibly aware of how offenses were trying to attack them. And so it almost felt like it was a matched style defense, even though it was just really good players reacting and playing at a very, very high level.
Why hasn't now the answer is that he hasn't had Hall of Famers, really. But why might more of that match style be better than strictly zone for the personnel they have now?
Because I don't believe that they have the personnel that is going to be extraordinary in the athleticism that they possess, or the overall, I don't mean to downgrade anybody, but the Legion of Boom
was comparing them to guys who were
all pro Hall of Famers. Exactly. It's just a different deal. And so I think it's more advantageous to allow guys like Quandre Diggs, Cody Barton, Jordan Brooks, instead of those guys having to worry about spot dropping and, you know, beating receivers to a certain spot, now I get to match up with them. I get to be the aggressor. I get to put my hands on them. I get to play zone with man principles, which then makes it more difficult for the quarterback to have wide open throwing lanes. You're putting more pressure on the offense and being more of the aggressor, dictating the terms to them rather than, you know, sitting back and letting the offense, you know, do whatever they want because you're playing so soft. You will not see that in a match-style defense. Match-style defenses are very aggressive in nature, and I think that is the absolute right call given the personnel that they have, and I think it'll make the Seahawks defense, it'll put them in better positions to succeed.
All right, Clint Hurt also talked about how you can keep offenses guessing and also what the new defense can do with Jamal Adams to take advantage of him. We're going to get back to that sound at 12:45. Coming up in 20, something Jerry DePoto said last summer about the Mariners' timeline to be contenders is especially relevant during this series against the Blue Jays. First, though, two big questions linger around the Seahawks this offseason. That's next.
Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
Earlier in the show, I was mentioning anyone should and would be horrified by a possum coming out from the ceiling in the media booth, which is exactly what happened at the Oakland Coliseum. Press had to be evacuated, and it's just a running joke about the state of that stadium in the first place. So then I was talking about, you know, kind of like the scariest things that could happen. And a listener texted in and said that when he was in the Army, he went back to his barracks and went to his bunk and there was a bat hanging above him.
Oh, yeah. No.
That's
no,
a no,
no
from
no.
me.
Nope.
Yeah, as a famous American Idol judge once said, that's a no for me, dog. Because also, the bats are erratic flyers. They're blind. They don't know what they're
Correct.
Doing. They're reckless. They're running into things. It's terrifying. And they're really fast flyers. If anyone's ever been outside and a bat mm-hmm. is flying around, it's horrifying.
Yeah, it's no thank you. I would want nothing to do with that.
That one was the scariest and creepiest of all the submissions, but maybe someone can beat it. I don't know if you've ever been in a place where you're like, yeah, I walked in, went down, sat down to work or got in my car, or maybe I laid down to bed and then there was an unpleasant surprise there.
A snake of some
yeah,
kind?
I don't want to say one that will terrify all of us.
No,
but
say it.
There are in Texas and Florida, because those are just wild, uncontrolled states.
The Australias of
the Australia,
the U.S.
Too. Well, yeah, in Australia. You hear the stories about massive snakes being
yes.
found in the toilets.
Excuse me?
Yeah, in toilets. People go into their bathroom and there's just a snake. Came up the pipe,
What's
curled up in
there?
The toilet. Yeah. Well, imagine discovering that as you're trying to, you know, go to the bathroom.
I have to say it is one of my great irrational fears.
Now,
that's
you know,
my
greatest
fear.
Have you ever... Okay, one of my other irrational
fears.
Now that we're talking about this,
oh,
okay, we will.
It.
Sorry, we will get to this conversation when we get to it. But is there anyone else out there that gets into their car and immediately checks behind them because they fear that there is someone that is
yes.
going to attack them?
Yes, 1,000%.
I do it every day. Like, I will not be surprised. No one is going to sneak up on me. Never. Okay, so when I get into my car, I always, always am checking my backseat. I don't know where this came from. I don't know why I do this, but it is an irrational fear of mine, just like the toilet left go. I never walk to a toilet, even when I'm tired in the middle of the night. I will not just like blindly go to the toilet. I will check the toilet first, like every time. No way. I'm not slipping up.
I usually worry about what's in your shoes. Someone, by the way,
that's
a listener from the 425 says, sitting down for a quick smoke in California, and only after standing, I realized I was sitting between two Black Widow webs.
Oh.
That's poetic.
Okay. That would definitely freak me out. Well, glad nothing happened to you. That's
Yeah.
I don't know how you not noticed that, but I guess you're just enjoying your moment there. But, man, I don't like this conversation.
Someone else got bit by a piranha on a trip to Peru. The last thing I'll say is always look in your shoes. And this story I will not take on air, but my mom learned the hard way to always look in your shoes. Yeah, tough stuff. All right.
My irrational fear is quicksand. We live nowhere near quicksand.
No, that's also, but... that's one of mine. I completely identify with that listener. Because I saw, Jungle Book.
In a city.
The live action Jungle Book from like the 90s has, I think, quicksand,
so,
and people die in quicksand. And since that day, I've been nervous about quicksand, and I'm always careful on the beach. There's no quicksand on the beach, but you never know. There's lots of sand. Is it quick? Is any of it quick?
When's the last time you've been to a beach, though?
I don't know. Before in my life sometime. You never know. You never know when you're going to go to a beach. You never know when you're going to come across quicksand. You stay alert. Stay ready at all times. I understand where this listener is coming from.
Sometimes it's in the living room.
Just always carrying around rope with you just in case if you need to throw
never
the lifeline.
Throw an anchor.
Someone.
Guys, oh, I'm completely, man. I sidetracked us so much. I'm sorry. Well, look, here's what I wanted to do. Yesterday for Hype Train, which we do every Tuesday, every Thursday, one of the ones we didn't get to was that the Hype Train was DK Metcalf's contract would be done by OTAs, or excuse me, the start of like the big offseason trainings that were going to happen in June.
Okay, hold it. Wait, I'm so sorry.
Is there something
Tyson
worse?
In Gig Harbor. Hi, guys. I was working in the ICU at a local hospital in 2016 when a visitor brought in a python unbeknownst to us.
No.
And it was lost in a patient's room.
No.
A few weeks later, the python fell out of the ceiling.
No. That can't be true,
what?
Tyson. Tyson, I need photo evidence.
Wow.
I need something here. I need someone.
That is.
Yeah, I could disrupt this show with a few more stories like that. I don't know if they're true.
No, let's just sidetrack. Let's get sidetracked because now people are sending in a bunch of stories saying, I had a coworker once open a box of bananas and a baby scorpion ended up on his hand. Luckily, he shook it off onto the ground. Baby scorpions are more deadly than the regular ones.
I thought that was just going to be, I had a coworker open a box of bananas, and then that was Dave Wyman's biggest fear.
And onions.
He doesn't like bananas?
Oh, no, he hates bananas.
Oh,
but that was the story right there.
That's a bee crazy. Flew into my helmet while riding in my motorcycle. The text line is just blowing up. I'll talk about DK Metcalf and his new contract. People are like, I mean,
we'll get to it in the next segment.
We'll get to
but
it in
right
a second.
Now,
right now, all people want to say is the time that they accidentally stumbled across something very deadly.
Well, we all have these fears, right? So I think this is very therapeutic for all of us to talk through them.
I think so.
But the 253, when I was in the military, got in a sleeping bag. A rattlesnake was in it, got bit, had to be airlifted to the hospital. Yeah, that is
that's
a fear.
That's the worst one.
That's a fear. That's why you will never catch me camping because of those types of stories.
How about this one? Fishing off Santa Barbara. Fun. Got in the water to untangle a rope, and probably 20 minutes later, a 9-foot shark, Mako shark, attacked a fish we were landing. So you got in the water, presumably, while the shark, a 9-foot shark, was in the water.
Yeah, that.
Hold on. I want to know if the 360 is calling us all a little out of shape and overweight.
Excuse me? What do you mean?
Yeah. The 360 says, you can't die in quicksand. Displacement won't allow it.
So they're saying I'm too fat to die in quicksand. That's what they're saying?
Your body mass will just be too wide to really sink through it.
Well, so you're saying the Jungle Book lied to me.
Well, that's a small child. Yeah.
I think I could die in quicksand if I wanted to, okay? Mind your business.
If I want to die in quicksand, if Stacey wants to die in quicksand, she will die in quicksand.
Oh, my God. The person sent in a news shot. So I said, Tyson, are you lying about the python falling from the ceiling in a hospital? No, it happened. They sent in a screenshot of the article as proof that the python did, in fact, fall from the ceiling.
Man, that is so That is crazy.
I like I personally like the way that we all spent this segment together. Listeners
I do too.
And us alike, just kind of bonding. If I see any other really good ones, I'll let you guys know. You guys are sending in. Literally, they're coming in too quickly for me to click on. You get one more to read.
509. Oh, and there's a bunch of good ones.
I want one more too.
Okay, you gotta go. Now
the 509. Outside of having a barbecue with friends, took a sip of my soda can.
No.
And the bee that had flown in the can stung me in my mouth.
No.
Check your cans, not just your shoes, Stacey. That's what the 509 suggests.
If there is one thing that I want all of us to leave with after this segment, and in fact, as we wrap up our first hour, it is not necessarily what we learned from Clint Hurt. It's not looking forward as to whether the Mariners will get reinforcements. It's not even wondering whether Baker Mayfield and DK Metcalf will land on this team. We'll get back to the segment we were actually supposed to have. It is to always look in your shoes, always look in your toilet, and always look in your drink.
Basically,
that is the number one lesson.
To keep your head on a swivel and live in fear. fear.
Live in fear
at all times. Make
exactly
sure
right.
that you are doing everything you can to survive. Check your soda cans. Check your sleeping bags. Do whatever you got to do. But no one's catching up on you. No, you don't catch yourself slipping in any situation. That is the moral of the story.
Never go ziplining in Canada either.
Oh, my God. You guys, there's so many good ones. I have to break. I'll get back to a couple of these in the timeline.
We got to get back to the timeline.
The timeline is meant for these kinds of stories. I'm going to find the best ones and save them, and we'll get back to them in the timeline coming up later. First, though, some sound was renewed during the Mariners Game 2 loss to the Blue Jays, and it had us trying to remember their own timeline to be contenders. That's next.